Again, if you'll take your seats.
That's where the word is.
I left you just enough time to want to talk more, didn't I? I'm delighted to turn the time to Sherry Baker, Associate Dean in the College, who will talk about our panel discussion and the ways in which we'll interact with the panel. Sherry?
Okay, thank you very much. Is this on? Are the microphones on? Okay, thank you. We just wanted to thank you all for being here today, and I want to thank Dean Jones for that wonderful walk through history and sense of our legacy. I think it sets up what we're going to be talking today about our responsibility in carrying on the wonderful tradition of this university. Excuse me? All right, I'll speak up. Thank you. And we also want to thank Dean Jones for his vision and allowing this opportunity for us to talk about these addresses by President Kimball. I want to thank Linda Sullivan for all of her work and effort and her talent in putting together these booklets, and I hope you've enjoyed reading them and having them for your library. And thanks to our panels for being willing to share their thoughts with us today about their views of these addresses. What we're going to do is I'll introduce the panelists. You can already see their names here. But they will each share their thoughts about the addresses, and then we'll open it up to you for your thoughts and discussions. So we have with us today Bob Barrett from the Department of Visual Arts, Mark Callister from the Department of Communications, Amy Jensen from the Department of Theater and Media Arts, Corey Katsianas from the School of Music, and Sterling Van Wagenen from the BYU Broadcasting. And we'll begin with Bob.
Thanks, Sherry. It's nice to be with the college again and with Sherry. I was on leave at this time last year working on some creative projects, but it's a pleasure to be back and rub shoulders with you all again. I missed the daily insight and words of wisdom that often came from the college. I was thinking of something that Rebecca Ott, our administrative assistant, had communicated with me some time ago while I was in the dean's office. She said, if you can keep your head while all others around you are losing theirs, get somebody to explain the situation to you. And that's the kind of wisdom that I have missed over this past year. Well, President Kimball became president of the church in 1973, and when he gave the second century address, he had been the prophet for 2 years. In both addresses, as John Tanner explained to us yesterday, expectations are outlined for students. Out of this university and the church educational system, said President Kimball, there will rise brilliant stars in drama, literature, music, sculpture, painting, science, and in all the scholarly areas. The university can be the refining host for many such individuals. And as explained, it's these students that are the outcome of our efforts. We are the refining hosts, and the destiny of the university in fulfilling this charge is in the hands of the faculty and the staff. In clarifying that expectation, President Kimball explains our double heritage, the intellectual and the spiritual, and the need that we all have to be bilingual in both of those spheres. In the second century address, referring to the office of president, he states, no man comes to the demanding position of presidency of the church except his heart and mind are constantly open to the impressions, insights, and revelations of God. He declares, this university was organized by the Lord, and articulates his aspirations for BYU. We desire a remarkable blessing and outcome for BYU in the second century. He refers to BYU as the greatest institution of learning and the center of the church educational system, and adds the following, BYU certainly must continue to be the greatest university, unique and different. This university is not of the world. It must not be made over in the image of the world. There is no justification whatever for our spending these millions of dollars on this institution unless we mind the purposeful objective given by the prophets. Many of us have had dreams and visions of the destiny of this great church university, added President Kimball. For long years, I have had a vision of the BYU greatly increasing its already strong position of excellence till the eyes of the world will be upon us. This will become the fully anointed university of the Lord about which much has been spoken in the past. We expect, we do not simply hope, that Brigham Young University will become a leader among the great universities of the world. The numerous references to the arts may cause us to ask why the focus is placed there. If we ask what God's greatest power is, we may be compelled to reply his ability to create. If we ask what is his greatest creation, we probably would answer we, his children. Through art, we become like our Father in heaven in that we exercise our creativity. Elder Maxwell has said, creativity permits us to see the wondrous order of things, their infinite beauty, their scope, but also their incredible detail. To use the words of Moses, we then see and feel things which we never had supposed. Artistic and creative expressions that occur in conformity with reality and with the sublime and eternal truths help to deliver on that marvelous promise that men are that they might have joy, and help us to live life more abundantly by showing us a more excellent way, adds Elder Maxwell. He continues, this creativity involves both a process and a result. It springs out of our seeing possibilities that we have not seen before, and out of seeing connections between patches of truth and beauty and responding to them in ways we have not done before. Our righteousness opens us up, like a blossoming flower, to both detail and immensity. President Kimball adds, when we talk of godhood and creatorship and eternal increase, we have surpassed the comprehension of most men. He refers to a time to come in which nothing will be withheld. All thrones and dominions, principalities and powers shall be revealed and set forth. He says to become an artist means hard work and patience and long suffering. In the faculty show this year, there's a drawing I did of a young dancer who was a member of my singles ward this past year. In the evenings when I conducted interviews, I observed her feet iced on more than one occasion after dancing all day. She was selected to go to New York this summer to attend master classes at a prestigious dance academy. Of that opportunity, she wrote, I head out to New York on Saturday and I'm pretty excited, but way nervous too. It has been kind of hard because I recently found out that there are going to be master classes on Sundays, and even though it has been hard to make this decision, I've had to decide now what my priorities are. I have decided that going to church has to be a priority, even if I have to miss out on things. It always was in my mind, but then, she goes on to explain the pressure she received from different sources to attend those Sunday master classes, and adds, I know better though. I know that being LDS, we have a certain lifestyle that sets us apart from the world. I have to make the church a priority. Speaking of students, young people with a love of art, talent supreme, and eagerness to create, President Kimball states, BYU should produce such students as we catch the vision of our potential and dream dreams and see visions of the future. He adds, we can bless many and give many experience while at the same time we are developing the few select souls who can take us to new heights of achievement. When then one has to ask, are we attracting the right students to BYU, and will any of them need our help in being admitted? Continuing, President Kimball states, we cannot give in to the ways of the world with regard to the realm of art. In quoting David O. McKay on the perils of spiritual decay, he adds, never have the forces of evil been arrayed in such deadly formation as they now are. Last year, in his worldwide leadership address, Elder Bednar informed us, Lucifer relentlessly assails and distorts the doctrines that matter most to us, individually, to our families, and to the world. The adversary's attacks will continue to increase in intensity, frequency, and sophistication. Elder Bednar referred to the counterfeit alternatives the adversary advocates and added, as I read and study the Book of Mormon, I learn that understanding the intent of an enemy is a key prerequisite to effective preparation. Brigham Young stated, there is no music in hell, and President Kimball remarked, our art must be the kind that edifies. President Kimball asked us to take the time necessary and make the efforts required to assume a posture of readiness and openness. Perhaps you have heard the following story reported earlier this year in the Wall Street Journal. On Friday, January 12th at 7:51 a.m. in El Infant Metro Station in Washington, D.C., in the middle of the morning rush hour, a classical violinist performed six classical pieces for 43 minutes as 1,097 people passed. The article asks, is there time for beauty? Each passerby had a quick choice to make, one familiar to commuters in any urban area where the occasional street performer is part of the cityscape. Do you stop to listen? Do you hurry past with a blend of guilt and irritation, aware of your cupidity but annoyed by the unbidden demand on your time and your wallet? Do you throw in a buck just to be polite? Does your decision change if he's really bad? What if he's really good? Do you have time for beauty? Shouldn't you? The violinist was Joshua Bell, an internationally acclaimed virtuoso. He played to the crowd on a 1713 Stradivari violin valued at $3.5 million. In the three quarters of an hour that Joshua Bell played, seven people stopped what they were doing to hang around and take in the performance at least for a minute. 27 gave money, most of them on the run, for a total of $32 and some change. This is from a man whose talents commanded normally $1,000 a minute. That left 1,070 people who hurried by oblivious, many only 3 feet away, few ever turning to look. There was no ethnic or demographic pattern to distinguish the people involved, with one exception which remained absolutely consistent. Every single time a child walked by, he or she tried to stop and watch, and every single time a parent scooted the child away. This was all videotaped by a hidden camera. The author added, Joshua was, in short, art without a frame. George O'Keefe stated, nobody sees a flower, really. It is so small, it takes time. We haven't time. And to see takes time, like having a friend takes time. Elder Bradford instructed us, nothing suits the devil better than to become a silent partner with us. He also knows that while immortality, we are all subjected to time. If by his subtle means he can become our silent partner, he can then influence us to make wrong choices that use up our time unwisely and prevent us from doing that which we should. President Kimball adds, when there is a crisis of purpose, nothing will really seem worthwhile or meaningful, and suggests there will always be that added dimension which the Lord can provide when we are qualified to serve. How do we qualify? For President Kimball, one of the rich rewards coming from doing great things is the capacity to still do greater things. He adds, we must be better in order to become better, and we must be better for the sake of the world. To John Taylor's prophecy regarding Zion, he adds, so much of what is desperately needed by mankind is bound up in our willingness to contribute to the fulfillment of that prophecy. There were brethren who had dreams regarding the growth and the maturity of Brigham Young University, even to the construction of a temple on the hill they had long called Temple Hill. Yet dreams and prophetic utterances are not self-executing. They are fulfilled by righteous and devoted people making those prophecies come true. From the beginning of his addresses, President Kimball referred to our dual heritage, the intellectual and the spiritual, one realm based on the academic tradition where we are asked to question and scrutinize everything, the other based on a spiritual tradition where we are asked to accept on faith. In speaking of the learning that comes through obedience, President Kimball referred to absolute or ultimate truths and quoted President J. Reuben Clark, God has vouchsafed to us for our guidance, salvation, and exaltation. These truths are shields against temptation and our redemption for sins. They give us light to our feet, and they guide us on our way. President Kimball adds, they draw aside the curtains of heaven. President Kimball also declares the scriptures contain the master concepts for all mankind. In DNC we read, verily I say unto you, among all of them who know their hearts are honest and are broken and their spirits contrite and are willing to observe their covenants by sacrifice, they are accepted of me, said the Lord, for I will cause them to bring forth as a very fruitful tree which is planted in a goodly land by a pure stream that yieldeth much precious fruit. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.